Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life Radio Show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, everyone, and I'm Dr. Joanne White, and it is such a pleasure to be here today, and really very important pleasure, too, to talk about the topic that we're going to be covering today with an expert, because caregiving and caring for the caregiving is really very important. Caregiving itself is a challenge that many people, many adults, have to go through at various times of their lives, whether it's with a spouse or an aging parent, a loved one, and there are so many ups and downs to it. And today we're really lucky to have Dr. Phyllis Quinlan to help us make sense of it and really do what I said, care for the caregiver. She is a nationally certified care nursing host. She's certified in emergency nursing. She's a continuing education staff development and legal nurse consultant. And she's also held senior leadership positions in administration and also in education within emergency services, acute care, and long-term care. So she really knows her stuff firsthand about how to take care of people. Dr. Quinlan has promoted balanced living and a healthy work environment, also as a Feng Shui practitioner since 1999. And she has this wonderful blog that we'll be talking about called Caring for the Caregiver. And recently she launched a new personal coaching service in which she blends traditional coaching practices with Eastern philosophy and energy healing. She's also an accomplished public speaker and an active member of the Professional Women Network, a colleague of mine, and featured in numerous publications that focus on nursing, coaching, and feng shui. So today, she's going to help us really kind of sort out what we need to do as caregivers and give us some great tips. Phyllis, how are you?
I'm fine, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Now, shall I call you Dr. Quinlan or Phyllis? Or
how about Phyllis?
Okay, that's great. So firstly, I mean, you've been in nursing and critical care and really just held your own in all of this for so many, many years in terms of leadership and education. How did you kind of shift, if you have shifted, into this whole area of caregiving? How did that come about for you?
It actually came about because I found myself starting to detach from the thing that mattered most in my life, which is really my professional nursing practice. And I found that for whatever reason, I was starting to put some emotional distance and some energetic distance between what I was doing and, you know, how I was expressing my compassion and how I was being able to practice. And I really started to become concerned because I wasn't acting in the same manner that I was acting. It was almost as if I wasn't recognizing myself anymore. And then I started to realize that some of my personal relationships and even some of my workplace relationships were changing. And, you know, there was just too much going on around me for me to say, well, gee, what's going on with the world? I really had to stop and take a good long look at what was going on with me. And that's when I started to almost treat myself as my own patient in the sense of really trying to drill down as to, you know, when did this start? Why is this starting? What am I feeling? And starting to process some of these emotions and some of these sentiments and trying to realize that I wasn't taking as good care of myself as I was the people I was serving. And whether that was professionally or perhaps, you know, people I was caring for in my own family, I realized that my well had gone dry. And
you know, I think, go ahead.
No, that, please.
No, I just, as you were talking, I was thinking that initially I was thinking about how it's family members that have to really do the caregiving. But you brought up something that many of us who are in the field of coaching and caregiving and counseling and nursing are also having challenges with, and that is when you're doing that caregiving on for other people, no matter whether, like you said, Phyllis, no matter whether it's personally or professionally, it still takes a toll.
It does. It really does. And, you know, I want to say, you know, initially here that not everybody has the capacity to care for another person. So those of us who do, whether it's professionally or as a family caregiver or a friend caregiver, you know, there is something very special and very unique about the personality, the character of that person, and it is that ingredient in their character needs to be honored, but it also needs to be nurtured, and it cannot be taken for granted. And you have to be a good caregiver for yourself is really the lesson that I learned, because when I bumped up against this wall and then started to almost detach from the thing that gave me my life meaning is when I really started to do a little research and start to understand that I truly was not being a good caregiver of myself. And once I embraced that and started to literally put myself first, as difficult as that was for me, things changed dramatically, and I found myself renewed and actually expanded as far as being able to offer compassion, offer care, offer counseling, offer coaching, offer myself more.
You know, that's just what you said is so important, because putting oneself first, I work, as you do, with a lot of caregivers, and they are so uncomfortable when they're taking time away from taking care of their parent or their loved one. They feel guilty. They feel that they shouldn't be doing that, that they're kind of dishonoring the relationship with the person that they're serving and they're helping. And yet what you're saying is that it's almost essential. You have to do that, and I want people who are listening here to really hear that, because it's so very important to, like you said, put yourself first. So what are some of the challenges, Phyllis, that caregivers have?
Well, the first thing is indeed getting comfortable with the idea of putting yourself first. And what I'd like to do is just, you know, put out there that, you know, as you said, we all struggle with that, and there's, you know, this guilt and you know, well, that's being selfish, and I don't want to be selfish. I'm looking to be generous. But here, if you take good care of yourself, it really is an act of generosity, and I would like to try to help your listeners change their perspective in that sense, because the more you take care of yourself, the more available you are to be present for other people. And it be present in a very meaningful, powerful way. But if you are on fumes, if your well has gone dry, you may be present, but you will not be therapeutic. And you will not be able to give the quality of sharing that you're looking to do until you take good care of yourself. So I think the mentality of taking time and literally carving out specific time for yourself, and even if you have to negotiate for yourself in the beginning. So, you know, I have shared with some of my coaching clients, I really want to see you. Tell me what hour of the week, just 1 hour a week, is just for you. And, you know, they're looking at me like 1 hour a week, you know. I'm like, yes, you know, whether that is, you know, that you're going to sit and meditate, whether you are going to take a walk, whether you are going to get a pedicure, whether you are going to read a book, take a bubble bath, 1 hour just for you. And that means cell phone's off. People know you're not available to anyone but yourself. And starting that in that kind of a fundamental manner. And once you get comfortable with that 1 hour, you start to realize that you have more and you are more complete and ready to be able to give. You realize that, you know, this is the way to go. And being more mindful of what your needs are, whether you need to set limits with people, whether you need to set limits with yourself, whether you need to learn how to say no when no is appropriate. All those things then start to come from just spending that 1 hour with, you know, for yourself.
You know, I think that's such excellent advice because a lot of people don't eke out that particular hour. And there are so many challenges that arise in terms of the, particularly with the kind of caregiving. Sometimes it's physical, having to bathe somebody, and issues with sleep. And oftentimes the person that you may be caregiving may have dementia, as my mother did, or may also have anger issues or incontinence, so many different things that drain you on different levels, including the spiritual level. And so taking that 1 hour out, and that's probably not enough, but that's, like you said, Phyllis, that's a start, is so very, very important. Now, another question that I have for you is when people say, because you and I both have experienced this in our coaching practice, when people say, well, I feel like I'm not doing enough. And they really, I mean, if you take a look at how much time they're devoting and really kind of putting their life in many areas on hold, they are, but their mindset is that they're not. How do you change that mindset? How do you help them see that they're really doing a good job and they're doing, I always say to them, they're doing the best that they can. But what are your recommendations?
Well, I think probably the first thing I would do is engage that person in the discussion to really get a sense of exactly what they're doing. So, you know, let's just put a calendar of 7 days out there. What does your Monday look like? What does your Tuesday look like? What does your Wednesday look like? And, you know, sometimes you get so caught up in the act of caregiving that you don't see just how much you're doing, and you really need someone to mirror that back to you. So in being able to discuss that, and all of a sudden it's now on a spreadsheet, so to speak, of the 7 days of what you do morning, noon, and night, you know, tell me where this is not enough. You know, help me better understand why this is not enough. And really, those are the types of warning signals that I listen for, you know. When people are on the verge of really, you know, starting to suffer from caring too much, you know, that if they feel that they're not doing enough, it's kind of like a little red flag for me to say, okay, now we need to step back and put this in perspective. I think another little warning sign that I listen for is when I understand that, you know, people might offer help, but help is not accepted, you know. I often hear, if I'm talking with two sisters, so to speak, well, I offered to do this, or I told her I could take care of that, but then the other person stepped in and said, no, I've got it. No, I've got it. No, I can do that too. And you see that this person is, there's a controlling layer over this where help is indeed being offered, but they're resistant to it. These are you know, indications that, you know, you really do have to step back because you're on the verge now of having this very wonderful, compassionate nature of yours work against you. And you can start to really lose your sense of perspective. And, you know, and it's time to start, you know, taking that hour for yourself, accepting that help when it's offered, looking for alternatives and delegating responsibility and feeling comfortable with that delegation.
You know, that's important. However, there are also many people I know from my experience in working with clients wherein there's usually one person who's the primary caregiver, whether it's because of distance or because of they do it better or the person responds better to that particular caregiver, that particular individual or whatever. So what do you do in that instance, particularly if there's distance or if that caregiving is really solely on somebody's shoulders by them alone?
Right. You know, it is, when we talk about the experience that I've had in extended care or long-term care, you know, often those of us in that healthcare venue bump up against, you know, a situation where one woman can give birth to six kids and six kids can take care of one woman. And, you know, it is heartbreaking to see, you know, that kind of resistance, but it's there and we know that it is. The piece is to try to bring the players together as best they can. Now, that doesn't mean you all have to be sitting in one room. Somebody can be on the computer Skyping. The other person can be phoning in, you know, on a phone, you know, a conference call or something. But if you're not able to do, if you know, we say to the family, okay, I hear that you're in out of town and you're not able to do the hands-on caregiving, but can you handle the banking? Can you make arrangements for this? Is there some other part of care that you can be doing so that there is a shared responsibility and that it's not just one person? And sometimes, again, you know, there is that one person who's like, well, I can do this, I can do this. And there can be a time when you have to confront that person with, you know, what happens if you get sick? There has to be a contingency plan. So why can't we develop a support system sooner rather than later? So not that in case you get sick, but let's prevent you from getting sick to begin with. So there's always something that someone can do. It may not be exactly the hands-on caregiving with incontinence and bathing and the activities of daily living, but there usually is some way that someone can participate, even if it's monetarily, because maybe the person who's doing the direct caregiving needs to have help come in, and we need to have some financial support to pay for that. You know, it may come down to that kind of bottom line, but we try, if there is a group of family members, you know, a group of siblings, you know, we try very hard to hold everybody equally accountable within the framework of their personal capacity.
You know, I think that's important, but I'll give you another situation, and this comes really directly from many of the clients that I coach and counsel. So the caregiver is at his or her wit's end or just really fatigued and wants to bring in some help, and there isn't a family member available, and so is ready to do whatever he or she can to hire a person, and then the person that they're caring for says, no, I don't want that, I don't want a stranger, I don't need help. And because oftentimes it's not somebody that may be totally so infirm that you have to be there 24/7, but what do you do with that?
You know, I think you and I have probably bumped up against that with our own parents. I know I have certainly, you know, had those issues. And you, the piece that I have learned because of, you know, all of the leadership roles that I've had and, you know, all of, you know, the things where I've had to go in and you know, stand up and be the lead person, you know, in my professional life sometimes has me doing that in my personal life so that I go in and I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to do and here's how we're going to take over and I'm going to structure this and this is how I'm going to take control of this situation who's a little bit out of control. And you know, we have to realize that our aging parents and anyone else who is, you know, we're looking to care for, you know, one of their last things that they're ready to give up is their sense of independence. We are dealing for the most part with adults, fragile adults, although children are part of our caregiving circle as well. There is a respectfulness that has to happen, and sometimes these kinds of interventions have to happen incrementally over time, and you have to be somewhat subtle, okay, so that there is a negotiation process that needs to take place, and you never be afraid to say that you're not capable of doing it all by yourself. And, you know, you may have to, you know, point out to your parents, or whomever, you know, I have a full-time job, I have my family responsibilities. I want to be as present for you as I possibly can be, but we have to find an area here where we can negotiate. And not so much insisting, but really trying to appeal to that person so that they indeed start to understand that you're giving as much as you possibly can at this point in time. And then one of the things with my own parents is to have them understand, you know, it may not be forever, but it is for now. And right now, this is what we need to do for now. And then once they start to get comfortable with this, like everything else, there is a learning curve. There's a time of adjustment. And when I first had to bring in, you know, family members, you know, my mother went, you know, I'm not having strangers in the house until that became, we had the person come twice a week, and then we had the person come three times a week, and then finally that became part of the routine that was accepted. But you also have to screen the people you're working with. You know, if you can have people that are referred to you because they are, you know, comfortable working with frail elder folks, or, you know, have an extended family experience and understand nuclear family, and, you know, really can relate on a personal level to the people that, you know, you're looking to help care for, that's so very, very vital.
You know, I think screening is really very important, because you have, firstly, there has to be some kind of fit between the person who needs the care and the person that's coming in that you're probably hiring or whatever, and there needs to be some kind of compassion, and it may take a couple of people. I know with my own mother, who's deceased several years now, she was adamant about me bringing someone in, but she clearly needed help, and I said, you know, Mom, you need to do it for me, and she was. She was reluctant, but we had to go through several different caregivers before, you know, several different people that we hired very temporarily before we found one that was a good fit. So I think that's important, what you said, because I think that if we find someone that our loved one is comfortable with, they're more likely to be more receptive and to allow that time frame to be increased.
Right. There's a wonderful not-for-profit organization, Joanne, called Share the Care, and they have a website, sharethecare.org. And there are really resources on this website, and also seminars that people can attend that can really also be a wonderful resource to your listeners for how to develop a support network. And again, you know, not everybody can necessarily do the hands-on care and help with activities of daily living, but there may be people in your immediate circle, perhaps in your church circle, any of your other organizations, who can come in and take care of the lawn, help with laundry, pick up groceries, you know, help to transport people to physician appointments. You'd be surprised, you know, what a support circle can be created if you open yourself up to the fact that you need one, number one, and then you actually allow that to happen and for that circle to form.
You know, what's interesting is I worked with a gentleman many years ago, and his spouse was adamant, said, no, I'm not having anybody yet, like you had said, stranger in the house, I won't have it, I won't allow it, and everybody that came in she found a problem with. And then he decided to, with my coaching, decided to take another route, and he hired somebody for the understanding that she was really going to do more of light housework. So it was which was nice. And so when his wife thought, okay, so she's not really here to do anything, but he said, so while she's here, because he was working, while she's here doing light housework, let's have her make some lunch, because, you know, she's here and she's in the kitchen. And so that was the way that he was able to get his spouse to be more willing and accommodating to receiving that outside care.
That's exactly the point I'm trying to make with that negotiation and being subtle and introduce it step by step. you know, as opposed to my nature years ago would be to come in like gangbusters. Okay, here's how we're setting this up, and here's how it's going to be. And, boy, you know, all that did was throw gasoline on a fire. So, again, being subtle and not being afraid to say to your parents, I this is as much as I can do at this point in time. Or, you know, we have to have some things in place. And because perhaps you need surgery down the road, or perhaps, you know, your health isn't all it could be or should be at that moment of time. And, you know, there is a, you try to find the best win-win. You know, I hate to use the word compromise. I really try to work with the word negotiation so that there is a win-win for everybody here. Mom, this is as much as I can do. Dad, I can't do that. But, you know, what I can do is really bring somebody in who can do that. Let's try one day a week and see how that goes. And, again, you have to be patient that people might go through one or two series of caregivers before, you know, the right fit is found.
And I believe that there is a right fit. And so, like you said, and like I said, I think it's going to take time, and the person who is really doing the primary caregiving needs to understand that and I think go through the initial process by being there and kind of watching the circumstances and getting a sense of whether or not that is a right fit. We started out talking about what needs to be done and how the caregiver needs to really create that sense of balance for themselves. So I think that's really important. We don't have that much time. Give us some more advice. You talked about definitely getting outside help. You talked about really delegating responsibilities and putting yourself first. What else is important for a caregiver to know and to do for themselves?
I would certainly try to become more informed about what community support services there are. I certainly, you know, would want to, you know, have a contingency plan that if you needed surgery, you know, what happens if you fall and break your hip? What happens if all of a sudden you need your gallbladder taken out? There are long-term care facilities, extended care facilities. What's in your neighborhood? Because there is something called respite care. And it means that, you know, if you have to, you know, have surgery, or you have to, you know, be away for an extended period of time, then, you know, this person can go into the extended care facility and have support group care, you know, their medicines. They can have a social, they can socialize with other, you know, residents of that long-term care facility. But for a respite, and a respite is usually no longer than 4 weeks, most times shorter, usually, you know, 1 to 2 week period, but no longer than 4 weeks. Those kinds of services are very much available. Again, you know, delegating responsibilities that are appropriate to people who are stepping up. So when people say, how can I help, don't be so quick to say, gee, I've got it, or thank you so much. Really try to find a way that that person might be able to contribute in some way. You know, I think it's so very important for those of us who have responsibilities of caregiving that we also find a sounding board, whether it's a professional coach, a good friend, someone perhaps in their church group, but you need to debrief, and you can't feel guilty about that. You are not complaining or, you know, not being loyal to that person, but you are actually just, again, taking good care of yourself, debriefing, trying to put things in perspective so that you can keep yourself whole and balanced. I can't say enough about getting good sleep. You know, you really do have to try to get at least 6 hours of good sleep if you possibly can. And I don't really recommend sleeping pills as such, but there are a lot of things that are natural and herb-based, like melatonin and valerian root or sleepy time teas, that are helpful, you know. And sometimes they don't necessarily keep you asleep, but if you wake up in the middle of the night a couple of times, as I do, it's easier to get back to sleep, and you wake up having more of a rest. And I think really one of the biggest things that a caregiver can do for themselves is find a way to laugh every day. You know, it's life. It's the cycle of life. It is the, you know, the flow of life. You really have to try to find the joy in the little things and the amusement in the little things. And, you know, when they say laughter is the best medicine, they're not kidding. It truly, truly helps. So making sure that as you devote yourself to caregiving, you don't slip away from your own friends who you've laughed with for years and years and years, and they keep, you know, you keep in good contact with these people and really still try to find those little things that can give you joy or the irony of a situation that just makes you belly laugh.
You know, I think what's challenging is that for somebody who's a caregiver, there's often a sense of isolation, so that because they're going through their own fatigue or their own guilt or their own feelings about it and exhaustion, they often don't reach out to their circle of friends. And like you're saying, doing that, seeking relationships, making sure that you are doing that is so very important, because otherwise it's really costing you. So let's talk a little bit. You have this great blog, Caring for the Caregiver, and tell us about the blog, how it got started, and how people could get a hold of you, Phyllis Quinlan, and your website.
Well, I started the blog because I wanted to have a way of being able to reach out to more people about the issue of taking good care of yourself. So, again, I am a big, I do study Eastern philosophy, and I'm a big proponent of Eastern approaches to wellness with feng shui and Reiki and meditation. There is an ancient Chinese text called the Tao Te Ching, and it was written by Lao Tzu about 500 years before the time of Christ. And it really is 81 beautiful verses of how to live a balanced life and how to stay energetically healthy and in the flow of life. So what I decided to do was a blog that I take one verse of the Tao Te Ching and I write an essay on caring for the caregiver. Sometimes it's focused on the professional caregiver. Sometimes it's focused on the family caregiver. But in general, I'm hoping at the end of the year, I've given myself a year to finish this, is I will have 81 essays of, you know, inspired instructions for how caregivers can take good care of themselves. And I really, you know, I've kind of pushed the envelope a little bit in bringing up some of the issues that we have as caregivers sometimes and what might make us resistant to accepting help. So some of the essays are inspiring, and some of them mirror back some of our own issues, and hopefully we take them and take that opportunity to drill down and do a little bit of introspection for ourselves. But the feedback from the blog has been amazing, and it will be a book in the spring of 2013, so I'm really looking forward to publishing that and having that out there for everyone.
Bravo. How do people get a hold of you? What's your website? And just let people know.
My website is www.mfwconsultants. That's Michael Frank William, mfwconsultants with an S.com. That's my website. And I can be emailed at mfwconsultants@gmail.com. And if you go to my website, mfwconsultants.com, there are links to the blog and links to some YouTube videos about feng shui and some ways for other energetic healing opportunities as well.
Well, Phyllis, Dr. Quinlan, it's been a pleasure. We are simpatico in our thinking, and also we are both members of the Professional Women Network, and I support everything that you do. I think this is such an important topic, and it's so important because there, I don't know the statistics exactly, but there are so many people, whether it's like you said, professionally or in the family, taking care of others, and so the information here is truly, truly invaluable. You've been a great guest. Thanks for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Joanne, and thank you to your listeners.
Have a blessed day.
You too.
Thank you. Folks, we've been talking about caregiving, and for those of you out there who are in that particular situation, really reach out and look at Dr. Quinlan's blog, because I think that there's some really meaningful, very important messages that you can get from that. Think about, as Dr. Quinlan said, think about really taking care of yourself first. Start putting yourself first, as she said. That's really number one, and it's not about feeling guilty. There's a saying about when you're on an airplane that if if you need to, if there's some trouble with the plane and you really need to be able to put on your own, you're put on an oxygen mask, rather than putting one on your child or somebody that needs it, put it on yourself first so that you can have the wherewithal and the breath that you need to do that for someone else. So I want to thank you for being here. And next week, we're going to talk about forgiveness. And we're going to find out how to be able to do that and forgive ourselves, forgive our higher power, forgive whomever for some kind of tragedy that could befall us. And we're going to have a special guest, and that's Elizabeth Cuxton. So please tune in. And again, make sure, whether you're a caregiver or just being you in the course of the day, make sure, no matter what, that you are taking care of you and putting yourself first, because as you do that, you really are taking care of everyone else, whether or not you realize it. Have a great day, and this is Dr. Joanne White. You can see my blog and my articles and get more information about my upcoming Power You online university for women that will be kind of showcased within the next week or so. And it's docwhite.org. Have a great day, and talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting divatoolbox.com and blogtalkradio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.